We made this.
Bad boys, bad boys.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Bad boys.
Nobody now give me no break. Police now give me no break. That old soldier man now give you no break. Not even your eyes will now give you no breaks. Hey, hey, bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Welcome to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Sarah Blair, and today we've got Cortland Waters Bartley back with us. Hi, Cortland.
Hi, Sarah.
And we are also welcoming back another blast from the X-Cast past. Say that three times fast. Zach Moore. How's it going, Zach?
Hello, ladies. Happy to be here with you. It's been a while since I've opened up the X-Files here.
I know. We're glad to have you. We're glad to have you both. Today, we're going to be talking about X-Cops. Are you excited?
What you gonna do? What you gonna do?
When they come for you. That was good.
did we all see Cops back in the day?
Yeah, yes. I did.
Okay. Yeah. There's like a cultural understanding, I think, of people of our age of what this is. I wonder how this would translate to people today, but we can talk about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, way back. Can you believe this was 21 years ago? I can't stand it. February 20th, 2000, this episode originally aired. I don't want to date myself, but that's a long time.
In my mind, the year 2000 was only like 10 years ago, though. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 2000 is like the future always.
Yeah. It's fine.
And we're talking about the 12th episode of season 7. So we're already almost halfway through, like basically halfway through the season.
Where Amazing. Does the time go?
I don't know. It just flies away. And this episode was written by Vince Gilligan, who we love. Yes. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong with a Vince Gilligan episode, right? And directed by Michael W. Watkins. So that's great, too. And this episode, if you don't know about this episode, I don't know, but give you a summary. When a mysterious monster starts attacking an L.A. neighborhood, Mulder and Scully run into the crew of Cops. Crossover. How many crossovers did the X-Files do? There was Millennium, right?
Millennium. There was, I guess, Law and Order? Because Munch is in an episode at some point.
I mean, was it a blatant crossover, though? Just like, I mean, this was
no, it wasn't
just
like
a straight-up ripoff, right? Does this count
this
as a
really
crossover?
I think it does. I mean, it's not really a crossover,
yeah.
But because it's not like reality.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't the actual
it's,
people.
It's close
yeah.
as it could be.
Yeah.
This is as close as a crossover between two shows could be.
Right.
And I think it would help that they were both on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it helped a lot. I think it was probably the same voiceover guy and they used the same graphics. I'm like, it's so authentic to what Cops is. It's what makes this work so well, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Even though, like, when they cut to commercial, they do that thing where they have the X-Files logo, but with the, like, blue and white lights that they did.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the voiceover kind of, like, cuts. It's perfect. Oh, they nailed it. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's talk about what you would score this episode. I think we're going to be pretty favorable towards this one. I'm guessing. I don't know what to expect. Cortland, what would you rate this episode?
Oh, boy. Out of 10, I think I would go like 8.5, maybe a little higher, 8.7.
Oh, 8.7, we doing like that now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
8.75.
This is really escalated, Zach. It's really escalated.
We like to be accurate here on the X-Cast. Mm.
Let's go with your gut on the decimals.
You know, man, for me, I was thinking around that as well. Like, I was between 8 and 9, so I think an 8.5, 8.5 is where I'm going to settle. Just entertainment factor is through the roof, and we can talk about, well, obviously that's what we're here to do, but I think this is, for what they set out to do, this was, like, so well done, so.
Agreed.
I think, since 8's my favorite number, I'm just going to go with 8.8.
Wow. Okay.
Because, you know, My rating system is definitely consistent. So IMDb rated it 8.5.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
We're
right on.
I'm in line with the public. And you guys were all around
where are they?
The range.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I do want to talk about a couple of elements of this episode. I'm very excited to dig in. Should we just go for it? Do we want to, like, talk about anything off the bat, or?
I was going to ask, do you know where that falls in the season 7 rankings on IMDb? Like, is it at the top? You don't know.
You know, like, season 7 is, it's either going to be, like, in the 8s or, like, the low 7s. Like, there's not really, It's, like, a high 8s, middle to low 7s. Like, there's not really a lot of even 8s. Or high 7s, and there's several 6s. So, yeah.
I guess I had a question if you knew, like, well, how did this even come about? Like, how did we get this crazy crossover of these shows?
Well, I know kind of the answer to this because I actually listened to the X-Cast Pod Watch episode about X-Cops in preparation for recording this. So thank you, Darren Mooney, for explaining.
Corlin did our homework.
On the Pod Watch, he talks about Vince Gilligan apparently had been pitching this episode or an episode like this for a long time and had originally been pitching it as an Unsolved Mysteries like episode.
Oh, an Unsolved Mysteries
like
crossover.
An Unsolved Mysteries crossover, right. And I think that was his plan for Bad Blood was it was supposed to be an Unsolved Mysteries thing. And like it wasn't even going to be Mulder and like it would be people, actors playing Mulder and Scully, not David and Gillian.
Like the reenactments.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, according to Darren, like finally we get to season 7 and we just don't have any more ideas. And so the pitch finally goes. Yeah.
That's what I is. It's like there are other. It's like by the time you're season 7, you can do anything at this point, or you ran out of ideas and you're just trying to do random stuff. And that's a perfect combination for something
right.
like this. So
right.
Thanks, Darren Mooney. I love Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
For his in-depth trivia. That's cool. You know, I think there's still, they could have done this and Unsolved Mysteries.
So
are so incredibly different.
Definitely.
Now this would have been much more entertaining. Like the Unsolved Mysteries thing would have been, like a Darren Morgan episode, I think maybe would work better where it's like this is kind of a self-aware parody in a way.
Yep.
That would have worked well because this works so much better because of the cameras and running around and all that. Because Unsolved Mysteries, it's like, what are you going to have like David Duchovny sitting in a like doing an interview and then cutting to someone playing him? Like it would be really fun.
It would
as well. So I think both would have been great. But that's interesting. This came out of that idea, but this works better because it's on Fox. Like I said, like you could like literally you could like theoretically, I don't know what everybody's local affiliate was, but you could be watching like Saturday Fox and then the X-Files comes on right after
right,
or something.
Right? Yeah. So. You don't even realize it's an episode of the X-Files until it's too late. You're already in
it. Yeah, it's too late.
You're in it. It's too late.
Do you remember the first time, Zach, did you watch this episode live?
You see, I thought I did. Like, and it's one of these things where you see someone, you're so young and you kind of like over the years, you misremember it. Because I thought it literally just started out like Cops. And then you see people running around and then suddenly Mulder's there. And you're like, oh, what the hell? You know, it wasn't quite like that. That's what, like, in my memory, that's how I remember it. So I know I saw it on TV at some point, and that's how my mind processed it for me. But I just remember thinking that's, like, the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Because you don't expect Mulder to show up on Cops.
Right? You know? And I remember being, I did watch it live. I was very confused at the beginning. I was like, what's happening right now? That because you didn't get the, what do you call it, like the little intro thing. Like that, the last time we saw an intro like that was kind of on the pilot. Mm-hmm. And you know, so right off the bat,
based on true events,
yeah. Like yeah. What is happening? Is this X-Files? Did I get the channel wrong? Like what's happening right now? And so it kind of did surprise me watching it live. I was very intrigued, and then of course Mulder and Scully show up. You're like, oh, this is awesome! Mm-hmm. It's very exciting and fun once you catch on. So yeah
they did remind me of actually the last X-Cast I was on was Drive, and it starts out with like a news. Mm-hmm. Break, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that. And so I enjoy, that's the thing, right? When you have these back in the day, right? When you have these 26 episode seasons or 22, 24, 26, you could play around with stuff like this. Like, you wouldn't see this a normal show today. Now, I say that, credit to the revival, right? Seasons 10 and 11, they did some crazy stuff with the format as well. So I always enjoy that when they can play around with it. So, because that's why we remember this episode, because it's so just out of the norm.
Me too.
Exactly.
I always love the ones where they take them a little bit out of their usual element. I like it. See something different.
And with this one too, you get to do the long cuts again, like in triangles. So that was really fun too, to see, you know, them storming in places and running around in the dark. It had to be really fun to film too, right?
You even see throughout it, David Duchovny, he's kind of like that's at this point, right?
Yeah.
Duchovny and Mulder, the line is blurring there, but you can see he's having fun with it.
Yeah.
he's like, we're just going to sit here for a while.
He is definitely having fun. Yeah.
I wonder if this, the guy who directed this, directed other episodes as well, because this is a totally different, like, obviously this is like a one camera,
I had some notes about that. I don't know about
Go ahead, Cortland.
No, I had notes about the cameras, not about the.
That's interesting. They're like, okay, you're the one who gets to do this fun, crazy one instead of like, bringing in someone who does this kind of thing all the time, because this is totally different. You know, they're not like on sets and blocking and all this stuff. It's like running around in the streets of L.A.
The show moved
to L.A. is what made this happen.
Yeah, it works so well.
Canada, you can't do this episode. Well, absolutely.
And it's so different, I think, from a lot of what we see in the X-Files, because there's no shift of perspective. Like sometimes, you know, we bounce back and forth between the victim and Mulder and Scully, or the monster even. And all we get is the camera in this one, which is really fun, like different way to see the story. I like
so
it.
He did a bunch. Michael Watkins also directed looks like Dreamland 2, Arcadia, Tithonus, Amor Fati, Sign and Zeit. So plenty.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good for him, because you wouldn't know. Like this was extremely smooth and really well like blocked out and directed and all that stuff, because it really feels like you're watching an episode of Cops where people run around.
Yeah.
Also, running around with cameras.
That's quite an X-Files resume. Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Exactly. Really? I knew I recognized. I was like, I know Holy he's cow. Done other episodes. Yeah. Some good ones. So we've got a teaser. We just kind of talked about this a little bit, but it's woven in with real Cops footage, the opening scene. And then you kind of see Mulder and Scully pop in there with the, I like how they wove everything together, because you kind of don't know what's going on yet. But then you see Mulder and Scully and it's like, hey, something's different about this, but I think I like it, but I don't know yet what's going on.
Yeah, it goes on long enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's the entire teaser. Yeah. We actually don't see Mulder and Scully.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're following this one guy. You're like, okay. He goes to this house. He's looking for a prowler, and there's scratches on the door. You're like, oh, it's a full moon. Oh, and you think you know where it's gonna go. The X-Files is a very mixed history with werewolves, by the way. So maybe it was for the best they didn't do
right. Didn't werewolf even try.
After all here, but. But then it's an incredible shot where the guy, they flip the car, he runs away and like they flip the car over and the camera stays in the car. Like that's impressive stuff for a teaser. Very exciting.
It is a really good teaser. And I think first of all, whether we like it or not, the Bad Boys song is infamous, you know? And
yes,
I mean, come on, that's pretty great. And I think that Keith Wetzel is awesome. I love Keith Wetzel as the character that we're first introduced to. And he kind of right in the beginning, he's leaning into like full moon and the tides. And I was like, Mulder's going to love him. Like, he's going to be all in love with this cop.
What do you think about the format? Was it just right? Was it a little too much over the top? Or do we like that about how they really like just go for it? I mean, I think I like it. I think it works great. But I know it's not for everybody.
I really enjoy it. It reminded me a lot. I mean, now we have a lot of like mockumentary kinds of shows. And I know this is really, you know, we talk about like found footage and like horror, like Blair Witch Project and stuff like that. But to me, it felt like a lot like a mockumentary. And so it made me think, you know, if we picked up the idea of the X-Files and dropped it into modern day like television, would it be like a mockumentary of ghost hunters? I think it might be. Like, I think it might be like, you know, something like that. And it made me think, oh, that could work. That could work. It would be way funnier than scarier, though.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea. You know, and it's you can't do it all the time, because if this was every episode, it'd get old. Like,
yeah,
you have to see something.
Sure.
Right. This is non-sustainable. But like, as a one off, I think it's a brilliant idea, because you drop these characters, law enforcement characters, FBI, into a law enforcement show with cops, and you have the whole like trope of like the local law enforcement's like, "You crazy? What are you talking about?" Right? And they're like, "Oh no, I'm in Mulder's just like, yeah, I'm looking for a werewolf here." Like, he's completely
totally normal.
Deadpan.
Totally
and
normal.
Like, are you
day.
Effing kidding me? Right? They bleep him out, and Scully's like, "We're on national TV." He's like, "Well, Scully, I don't think it's live. She just said bleep."
Yeah, that one of the best parts. I love that part.
It's hilarious. So no, I think the format was a great just coming together of all these things that fit together perfectly for this fun one-off episode. I wouldn't want to see another one like this, but for one-off formats, A+.
I think it was really well done.
And the found format stuff was really popular back then. So I'm glad that they were able to, I don't want to say get away with that, but you know what I mean?
Well, they kind of got in on it at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Because right? I mean, back then, I think it was because Blair Witch was around this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the one that kind of put it on the map. And then, I mean, you still see that stuff today.
Yeah.
It was still new enough to be cool when they did it.
Yes, it was very fresh. So
they were on the leading edge of this one.
As X-Files usually is, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Cutting edge of television.
What are you gonna do?
I do, and this is, I guess, my memory of the episode, right? Like, I guess one thing they could have done differently, and it's, you know, it's probably like a contract, you know, thing, but it's like they actually have the X-Files intro in the middle of this. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it would have been better if they just kind of left that out and made it just cops, period.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they'd like, with some like, well, you got to credit the actors and off the top. So that's, it doesn't break the episode from anything, but that would have been cool just, this is straight up cops.
I feel like I remember that coming up, and it wasn't in the pod watch, so not fresh in my mind where I heard it, but I think that was a discussion about whether or not they had to have the X-Files credits or if they could leave them out. And I think that the answer was no, you have to put them in.
Probably afraid people would just turn off.
Yeah, like, yeah. Okay, well, or
I don't want to watch cops, click.
Or they would be in some, you know, breach of agreement with David Duchovny or Julian Anderson, or, you know, something like that, where they have to put these in there. But I think that was a conversation that they had when they made this one. And I have no source to cite. I'm so sorry.
And I don't think this was a point in time when anybody wanted to piss off David Duchovny, right? I mean,
right.
They were walking on eggshells already.
Yeah, plus. So we just kind of suggested that where Mulder talks about the werewolf and all of that, and the line, oh man, that's great stuff, where she just said bleep.
That was great, because, you know, of course, like, they find them, and they're talking to the guy, and they're like, he's bit, like, it's, so they're gonna, it's like, well, werewolf law, you know, full moon, you're gonna turn into a werewolf.
It pretty much it universally holds. You're about to turn into a werewolf. Obviously.
He's interviewing the original cop that we saw at the beginning, who's throughout the whole episode. And then in the back of the ambulance, and Scully's there, and she just kind of hides behind a door
because
she's embarrassed.
I love.
And then she's like, "Can I talk to you for a second?" And he's like, "Oh, Scully, I get it. You don't want me to be embarrassed. I appreciate it." And she's like, "No, I don't want me to be embarrassed."
It's so brilliant, though. I think that the way they characterize, like, because it's Mulder and Scully, but it's also Mulder and Scully performing for the cops' camera, like, what, you know, performing. I say that in quotes, but so Mulder is all in, excited about this like opportunity, and Scully is horrified.
Yeah.
Horrified someone is gonna be part of their little,
see this.
Yeah. I mean, because typically their job is pretty isolated to themselves, you know, they have their own little world that they're in, and not anymore because there are cameras. Mm-hmm. And that's horrifying.
And she goes and calls Skinner for help. She's like, Skinner, please, you gotta get us out of here, you gotta like order us away. And he's like, no, we're not, we're gonna play this game.
It is an interesting,
the FBI has nothing to hide.
The FBI has nothing to
hide. I think
hide.
It's such an interesting thing from Skinner, though, like, no, we're doing it, and if we're doing it, we might as well just do the whole thing where, yep, we've got it, everyone can see it, and we don't care.
Well, see, that's the classic thing, right? If you're a conspiracy theorist, you're like, see? They shut it down. There's truth to it, right? But if you're just like, here, just let Mulder go out there and do his thing. and he'll make a fool of himself. And obviously, we can use this against him, put this in the pile of things.
Can you can you imagine Skinner sitting at home watching that episode when it aired?
Oh, he had a great time. He like had popcorn, snacks,
some whiskey, maybe.
Oh, a lot of whiskey.
So much whiskey, just straight out of the bottle.
Had cigarette smoking man over.
Just like hosted the whole syndicate. Guys, let's watch this. And the Lone Gunmen, you know they watch too.
Yes.
Oh, they were on that. They were the ones looking for the conspiracies.
They made copies. They have that like saved on a VHS tape for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's secure. In a secured location.
You mentioned all these other characters. And like that makes me think, like, you know what? This is so, talking about the format again, this is so unique to them because they are out running around and this, looking for people. Like, it fits these characters. Like, so many, if other shows tries to do this, it wouldn't make any sense. Because it'd be like, like, I was just thinking, like, oh, what if they did this for the Lone Gunmen? I'm like, why would they be with cops running around looking for things? Like, this only works for these characters.
But it works so well. That's what I wrote down about the way, especially in like, it's in the first and second act, especially where they're literally just running around in the streets, like from place to place, like they get a call and have to physically run to the next thing. And I was like, this camera thing works really well for making us think we're part of this like chase. Like we're constantly behind where the monster is. We're never in front of it like we are in other episodes. So I love it. I love that about the cameras.
Did you guys think it was going to be a werewolf the whole time?
No.
They quickly change gears.
They do.
To something else.
They do. And I really enjoy Mulder's reaction when he looks at that sketch.
Oh my gosh, yes. He's just totally befuddled. Totally. Like, what just happened?
They go to that house, and then he's like, look, see, there's a claw mark, like a human hand would be if it had claws. You know, and they bring in a sketch artist. You know,
he's all in on the werewolf.
Talking to the woman who lives there, and she speaks Spanish, so there's like a translator, and, you know, and you're like, okay, Mulder's going to get vindicated here. This guy's going to, because he pulls out another drawing from another police artist that a previous victim, like every few weeks this happens on something like that. Every full moon. For the last 6 months, right? And so a guy died in the hospital, but he described a werewolf, right? And Mulder's like, this is what we got. So he's like, I think that Mrs. So-and-so is going to describe something similar. Like, he's so confident he's going to get a sketch that looks just like what he has. It looks nothing like it. And who is it but Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Well, and it's so great because we're very accustomed to Mulder making absolutely ridiculous leaps. Like, of course Mulder thinks it's a werewolf and has drawn this conclusion in what he believes to be a logical way. And no, boom, done. Killed it right away. Mulder's dream of the werewolf has been eliminated by Freddy Krueger.
The Claw Man.
The Claw Man. Right away.
Oh, do you think they had to do that? Is Freddy Krueger, was he a Fox property or not? I'm wondering about that. Is that why they had to call him the Claw Man?
They have his likeness, so.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know.
They don't. Do they say Freddy Krueger?
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh, maybe that's how they got around it because it's like, hey, you can't copyright a guy in a fedora and a stripe.
Because what does the guy say? He says something like how they kill him in every movie and he just keeps coming back, but they don't ever say his name.
Yeah,
it's this cultural understanding, right?
And, we all know.
So that was pretty clever. Maybe they had some backroom deal, like, here, we're gonna, because who knows those horror movies? Who knows who owns those half the time? Right? They're always in flux. But that was a really cool way to understand how ridiculous you have to make it a fictional character to drive home how ridiculous the situation is becoming.
Yeah,
so that was crucial.
Also, because it's an iconic scary thing that people know, like it's a cultural icon, it makes Ricky afraid. The sketch artist it gives him fear, and then obviously that leads to later events. But like, because it is universally acknowledged to be a scary thing, that works really well for the story.
I mean, I was afraid Freddy Krueger lived in my closet when I was a kid. I can't blame him. I thought he was there. He was ready to come out and call
they
me.
Set up the sketch artist that way, too. Like, yeah. He's kind of scared like that. He's like, can somebody walk into my car?
Right?
It's
exactly.
Dark outside. Right? Like, this guy's next. Classic.
And he's wearing the vest and all
that. No one was afraid when we thought it was Mulder's werewolf, but then suddenly it's this recognizable, scary thing that people are used to feeling afraid of. So that works. To get it to move to the next thing.
Yes. Yeah. And Mulder is even further disappointed when he gets the news that Wetzel had insect bites instead of an actual werewolf bite that he was so convinced. So, yeah, Scully comes back. She's like, this is not even a thing. This is just an insect. He just had some insect bites that look like a bite mark. They just blended together. This is not anything we need to be worried about, Mulder.
I love her line, though, where she's like, which is an understandable conclusion that I'm sure anyone could come to. Like, yeah. I love she's trying to, you know, smooth that over
Safe
a little bit.
Face in front of the cameras. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's such a classic X-Files. Like, you think it's going to be like, okay, well, that's how they explain it, and you move on, but it actually comes back around later on. So I thought that was pretty clever how that actually does matter that it was an insect bite.
It does. Yes. Yes. So remember that for later. But, and I really love when the cameraman runs over to Scully and she's just like, no, you're not getting in this car. You're on your own.
I love that when she won't let him in the car.
No.
That's, you're riding with someone else. That's amazing. Good job, Scully.
And then, that comes back around though at the end too, because she just kind of looks at him and lets him in later.
I know. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She just has to go with it. Yeah. She's like, I guess we're doing this now.
Reason why people have to start taking this more seriously, because people start dying.
Yeah.
Like the sketch artist, they find him and he's slashed up next to a payphone. And it's so gross because they push his little puffy vest and the blood oozes
out.
That
part really bothers me. She's not even wearing a glove. She's like, let me just, and I'm like, no, Scully, come on. No, it's gross.
You're a medical doctor.
Yeah,
so
put your gloves on. Like, we know that you have some latex gloves somewhere. Like, no.
Right. And later she does the same thing with the body. And I'm just, oh, no.
Yeah, I know. Ew, gross.
Scully.
Anyway, okay.
Need those gloves, sister. But I did like the effect. It was a basic practical effect, but it looked really cool.
It did look good.
It looked really neat. Mm-hmm. You're not expecting
it. You can get away with that stuff in these kind of episodes where it's just like, you know, low budget, low light, kind of on the street. You know, like there's no CGI questionable dated special effects here. It's all just practical and suggestion and all that. Very effective.
It's just people running around in the dark.
Yeah. And it easily could have been.
All you need.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's the thing about this episode is that it's very understated. And you know, like the blood could easily have just been way too much and way over the top, but it wasn't. It was just enough to be like, ooh, yikes, this is a real thing now. So, you know, you're having fun on this journey, but then it's like, oh, somebody actually died and now there's real blood. So we need to maybe take this seriously, but no, let's see what happens next. And what happens next is Stephen Eady happened.
It's Stephen Eady. Yeah. What happens next is Stephen Eady.
Because they find this broken nail next to the payphone. They're like, well, what color is this? And they're like, oh, we know Steve and Indy live across the street. You know, they tell
they
us when
everything's
up. Yeah. So they go to their door and take it away, y'all.
I really love Steve and Indy. I mean, I think that they're pretty obviously a cliched version of these characters, but they're very endearing. There's something very endearing about Steve and Indy, I think.
I agree.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very 90s stereotype,
as
you said.
It really is. Yeah. Really. I'm sure.
But then if you watch Cops, that's also very accurate to some of the people they encounter. So there's that balance there, right? Like, you know,
well, I think,
but they are entertaining and endearing.
I think, I think Cops in itself probably is a bit 90s cliche.
Yeah.
So, even no matter how accurate, it's still pretty 90s. So
it's all in the editing, right?
Exactly.
That's right. It's all how they put it together, as they say at the end.
And Eady says when they see the picture, that's going to give me nightmares. So, you know, afraid. That's a key, right?
It is.
And also Wetzel says that's every cop's worst nightmare. So he's also, you know, I like that they plant the seeds for later.
Fears in the air with everybody.
Yes.
But they know the Stephen Eady, they know the nail color.
Yeah.
Oh, pink. Yeah.
This nail.
They got it.
Exactly.
I do love it when they leave. Edie's like, when am I get my TV show? Start singing. I'm like, yeah, she's got a good voice.
Yeah. I think they do.
It's cute.
Yeah.
Steve's been through this before.
Yeah.
They are really that whole. I had the subtitles on when I was watching, and they are. hilarious.
They're amazing.
They say a lot of like really small little comments about like no one cares, and like Steve's like trying to move Edie back into the house, like no one wants. It's really brilliant.
It really is. Yeah.
So yeah. Shantara Gomez, right?
Oh man,
that's right.
Bubblegum Pink.
Bubblegum Pink, just like you said. And I like how Mulder kind of, I don't want to say handles, but he convinces her to like come with them by saying, you know, I'm going to believe you no matter what you say, no matter how bizarre it might seem. I already believe you. So just tell me what you saw. And it's what she's most afraid of, because she's been infected by this mysterious fear. It's Chuko.
Well,
Chuko.
So
I love how Mulder's like Chuko, and he's not interested anymore.
Yeah.
He wanted to know. He wanted. He's like, oh, look, I laid this all out for you. You can tell me if you saw an alien or a monster or whatever. And she's like, oh, it was Chuko, my ex-boyfriend. He's like, oh, he does not
he
care
does
anymore.
He does not care about that. No. Mm-hmm. But I think I wrote this down because I think this is a little bit of a confusing moment for me about how the contagion of fear works, right? Because Ricky is the one who was attacked, but Shantara saw Chuko. So, but why would Chuko attack Ricky? Like, why would she see that? Or did it just look like that to her?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's how I was took like, it. Like, it's everybody so confusing. Sees something different.
Yeah. So, but she saw Chuko attack Ricky? The sketch
yes,
artist?
Okay. Because that's what she was most afraid of.
Got it.
She was afraid for her life. It was a mortal fear of Chuko.
Right. Because Chuko has threatened her life. Yeah. She has Correct. Reason to be mortally afraid of Chuko.
She's yes. going to twist her neck like a chicken.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like a chicken. Yeah. Yes. Indeed.
Also important. Yeah.
Yes. Also, a lot of plant, a lot of seeds,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then, but really, I mean, obviously, they're doing a really good job with, like, this is like if Mulder and Scully were on an episode of Cops, right? But then especially here, because one of the most famous things on Cops, I think, is how they blur people's faces and, you know,
yeah.
people. And then you never see this woman's face the whole time. It's nope. blurred the entire time. That's classic Cops. Because obviously they didn't have time to sign the release.
Right. Yeah. There's no time for that. They're very busy. Yeah.
Right.
No time.
And then, yeah, there you go.
And so you kind of know if you're a big Cops fan, you know maybe what's coming a little bit ahead of time. She's not going to make it through this in time to sign the form.
It so, also was super, I mean, because of Shantara, you know, Shantara, we have the nails and the hair, and it's great with, I mean, that's an excellent way to identify someone whose face you're going to blur the whole time, is to give them
that's
a
true.
Bright pink
that's a good...
hair, you know.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you see her in the back of the car and all that, you yeah. know who it is instantly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Very identifiable. Yeah. And well, she's...
Also, how Steve and Edie know who she is, because of the identifiable hair. So
it's hard to miss that hair across the street.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
When you're peeking out the window, observing the neighborhood diligently, like Steve and Edie do every night. Yeah, and they go after Chuko. I really like how much Scully is a badass here. She just gets that jacket on. She's all business. And they go in, and it's very serious for a moment. You don't know what's going to happen here. There's a lot going on in this house. And they find Chuko.
Chuko did not. Yeah, Chuko has been out of it for a few days.
Few days.
At least.
Yeah, we're not putting this on Chuko anymore. No, it's not Chuko.
He is OD'd in yeah. the bathroom.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is a classic Cop's house as well. There's a screaming baby.
Yeah.
Somebody's like, "Hey, have you seen Chuko?" And it's like, "Beep, beep, 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 beep."
Yeah.
Lots
yeah.
of curse words being thrown around. You know, broadcast TV. So this is very accurate to kind of the really overwhelming situations they find themselves
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it is really, I think, really accurate to like. The Cops episodes that I remember, like, definitely looked and felt like this scene. I do think this is where maybe the episode stops aging super well. We start to lose it a little bit in terms of, like, modern portrayals and things like that. But I do love seeing... I love every time we get to see Mulder and Scully working with other, like, entities. Like, anytime Mulder and Scully are with a SWAT team or, like, you know... partnering with other agencies. I love it. I like the idea of it because it's really out of their element. Like, this is not, we never see them like strapping on their bulletproof vests and like, you know, banging down doors and stuff. Like, that's just not what they do. I like seeing it. And you're right, Scully does look like a badass.
Except for when they're in federal buildings in Texas, apparently.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
I do love seeing them in action. It's so much fun to watch them go you know, do their thing. And because they've been trained, they're FBI agents. This is what they're trained for. And they finally get to do that instead of just investigating aliens and lots of files running around by themselves. It's fun. It's fun. Okay, so we know that Chuko is no longer part of the picture. And so we don't have to worry about him, but Shantara, she's in trouble. Poor Shantara.
Yeah, they hear some gunshots.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they know that Shantara has been attacked. They don't know how or why, because Wetzel was supposed to be watching her. And he's off chasing the monster again. Right? Mm-hmm. And so this is where he admits that it's the Wasp Man, right?
Yeah, that's where we finally get the story. But I think it's important that we see Shantara has literally been strangled, mm-hmm. like her neck has been broken, like a chicken, because she was afraid for her life.
That specific thing is very specific. And that's exactly what happened to her. Yeah.
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 I think it's interesting here because we understand that there's like this invisible entity. And do you guys remember in Sleepless how the people died? Is because they had these nightmares, but their brains told them the nightmare was real and then the thing actually happened to their body.
Yeah.
Like Freddy Krueger, like Nightmare on Elm Street.
So I'm really interested how, I mean, obviously, like, we're dealing with a completely different entity here, but I do think it's interesting because you could have the working theory that their fear killed them. But how does that explain what happened to their actual bodies? Doesn't.
Well, it's like the ultimate placebo effect, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's that on them. But then there's also something like an external force as well that's doing mm-hmm. something.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That's leaping from person to person.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, exactly. Because in Sleepless, it was only internally. Their bodies only reacted internally. They couldn't see anything outwardly.
Well, it's interesting. There's external things going on here.
Exactly.
Right.
This is very external. Yes.
But to that point, right, that's why Scully, like, they kind of break off. Like, Scully takes the, mm-hmm. to do an autopsy, right?
Yeah.
And then Mulder sticks with the deputy, right? And so they kind of break off a little bit there. And I really like, I really like Mulder and the deputy kind of riding around. And Deputy's like, man, people are going to think you're crazy. How can you get your respect? And Mulder's like, yeah, tell me about it.
It is a really great, that's a really very adorable conversation. Because Mulder is, like, you know, we know that Deputy Wetzel is new. I think he's like a year on the job or something like that. And Mulder obviously has been doing this for a while. And that's pretty cute.
Because they formed this bond, you know, because he is honest with him. He's like, yeah, my brother used to tell me about the Wasp Man. And like some are like, that's not a real thing, right? Like real in quotations marks. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
But
like, I know about, you know, cryptozoology and monster stories and stuff. I've never heard about the Wasp Man. So they invented that for this episode. But he eventually, you know, because it's funny because, you know, way back at the beginning of the episode, he was like, the car gets slipped. He's like, yeah, man, it was like gangbangers. It was like a whole lot of them. You know?
He immediately is like, yeah, it was gangbangers.
He doesn't want to, like, obviously admit that he saw some, you know, monster. The but worst. Now he's like, how do you deny it at this point, right? Because they find a bullet and it's like crushed and they're like, so what
did it hit?
Mean?
Yeah, what did that bullet hit? Like, is a something. Really great question. Because there must have been something there, but no one could see it but Deputy Wetzel, so...
Yeah, so there is some physical element to all this for sure. To wrap back around your question.
Yeah. I also really love right before they split apart, they have that conversation where Mulder says, we came here looking for a werewolf. And Scully's like, well, you did.
You did.
But I think that what that does is, even though it's not really the point of the episode, I think what this does is really highlight the why. You know, like they have that, people say that all the time now, like, you know, you have to know your why, blah, blah, blah. But why is Scully doing this? And I think that that's one of the things that comes out of this episode. That's not really the point, but is a little bit the point because we're in season 7 and why did they come there looking for a werewolf? And, you know,
why are the X-Files
still here? You know, things like that.
To that point, though, I think you can drop anyone who has the most basic understanding of the X-Files, of who Mulder and Scully are, mm-hmm. can watch this episode and appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because that really comes through with both their characters, right?
I think it's good. For me, that little conversation they have where she's like, well, you came here for a werewolf. Scully came there for something. And, you know, and she goes and autopsy Shantara to figure out what that is. Like, that's clearly mm-hmm. what she's there for. But
yeah,
I liked that little, it's really fast, really quick moment, because obviously a lot is happening in this episode.
Yeah.
No time
so
for
much
that.
Going on. So much going on.
It's extremely true to both their characters,
yeah.
even though we're in this mockumentary parody crossover thing. Like, they are themselves 100%.
Yeah, they're definitely still there.
Yes. And
this autopsy scene, though, right? Yikes.
Scully's going to follow the evidence.
I think that's, this is the scariest. You know. I think the autopsy scene, I think, is the scariest scene.
It really is.
Yeah, the scariest thing to me, though, was when the assistant, the person that works in the morgue, it's like, hey, shouldn't we be wearing masks?
Yes, I know. I wrote that down. I wrote it down.
It's too real. It's too real.
It's too real. We watch this stuff to get away from modern times.
Oh, no, we're not even wearing masks. And I was like, oh, yeah, put one on real quick.
Get the hand sanitizer, you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Hurry.
Yeah.
At least Scully's wearing gloves. So
thank goodness.
There's that.
And she has the eye things on, so that's mm-hmm. something, I guess.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Ooh. That's a lot going on. And I really liked how the assistant, it was the Emmy or the assistant who's with Scully, you know, she really played this out well. You could watch her starting to get more and more and more afraid and see it happening. So that, it was a really well played.
And you can watch her be not at all reassured by the fact mm-hmm. that Scully is not afraid. Like, Scully is not afraid, or at least not as afraid as the medical examiner is, but mm-hmm. you can watch her be not at all reassured by Scully's kind of sarcasm.
Yeah.
Like, no, nothing here. Nothing contagious here. Everything's going to be fine. Like, she does not, reassure her. She does not alleviate her fear at all, which is what leads to her death. Scully killed this woman.
And yes. And in fact, Scully makes it worse. Like, Scully makes it worse by saying hantavirus. And
the FBI has nothing to hide. Mm.
Because she's like, why are these cameras here?
She's great in that line, though, where she like looks up at that camera, and says, the FBI mm-hmm. has nothing to hide. Like,
that big old smile.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is, like, you know, we laugh about Scully, you know, suggesting what the disease was to this woman. They asked her, Scully, later, what happened? I don't know. She kept talking about hantavirus. I'm like, no, you brought that up.
Yeah. I always think that's really interesting. Like, Scully later is going to feel a lot of guilt about how this situation played out.
When she sits down to watch this episode of the watch party with everybody, she's going to be really embarrassed.
It is really awkward. I mean, Scully brings it up first and then cannot get the Emmy to let it go. And mm-mm. of course she can't, because she's mortally afraid. And then she dies. And
she
it's
is
horrible.
Convinced. Ugh.
And that makes sense. Somebody in that situation would be afraid of something like that.
Yeah, she so has reason to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what a way to go, man. Yikes.
Oh, it was horrible.
Nope. Don't want to do that. Get vaccinated, everybody.
Thank you.
Please get vaccinated if you haven't already, and wear a mask if you are in a crowded room.
We're not even wearing masks.
They're not. It's true. So true.
Side note, I always think about that in these X-Files episodes of her doing the autopsies. Like, she's just poking stuff with a pin. I'm like, is this what you're supposed to be doing?
No. She grabbed the back of Chuko's head and was like, he's been dead for days. I was like, why are you touching him? Like,
it was too much.
Yeah.
But this really we see it happen in real time.
Yes.
This is her death
on the camera.
The medical examiners. Yeah. She's, mm-hmm. she starts coughing up blood, passes out, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we see this taking its effect.
Yeah.
For the first time on, like you said, on camera.
On camera. So.
Mm-hmm.
Important moment.
It is indeed. So Wetzel goes back to check the house because, you know, they've got to retrace their steps to find this thing.
Why does he go back to the house, though? That's the one thing I was like, this is just to set up the end.
Yeah,
this
he
is a little contrived,
even says,
right?
He's like, we might as well check it again. And I was like, why, though?
Yeah.
You might as well, why? Like,
it's like, well, guys, we're not sure how to end the episode. Let's just have him go back to the crack house. Like,
right.
I love how, like, the location thing says literally crack house.
I know. Didn't even try.
I'm like,
not great.
Okay.
No. That's not great.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
but it is something that cops would do. Like, is it accurate a little bit to the show? Mm. Sure, but it's not great.
No.
Yeah, and I do, you know, I like the insight we get to him because he's back by himself again now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, man, you know, you go out there, you do this job, and people want you dead. It's scary. You know, it's like, it's going to, you understand his mindset and you understand why he's so scared. You understand why things are going to escalate the way they do here in a second when he goes back into this abandoned house by himself.
Yep.
Come on, horror movie tropes, man. Come on.
And he's already, we also have to remember, like, he's already seen the Wasp Man twice. Like, he has seen it as much as anyone can see this monster. And so he's seen it twice. He's fired his gun at it. So he really believes it's out there. Like, he has no reason to think it's not hiding in that house somewhere, you know? So it really sets him up.
When Mulder shows back up to everybody, he's like, hey, where's so-and-so? And they're like, oh, he's by himself. He's like, oh, you left him alone.
Right.
He's like, I was with him before. I've had his back. Yeah. And he's trying to explain why he wouldn't be afraid if Mulder was there. But Mulder's not there, and stuff's about to go down.
Yeah. And I wonder what's special. What do we think is special about Wetzel? That he gets to see this thing twice, and he survives, what, 3 sightings?
Uh-huh.
So he's the only one that survives these sightings, and he 3 times. Like, the last time,
I'll tell you
obviously,
what it is.
But, yeah.
He cowboyed up. That's the key.
Oh, man.
He was afraid, but not quite mortally afraid. You know.
Because while we start intercutting between what he's doing and what Mulder and Scully are doing, right? And Mulder kind of lays out, like, here's what's going on, right? It's mortal fear. Scully's like, well, I'm afraid. He's like, yeah, but you're not mortally afraid of this.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't kill you. And it didn't kill Steve and Eddie either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess before they go back to the house, like, Mulder and Scully pay Steve and Eddie another visit.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Interesting scene.
For a long time.
And poor Edie.
Well, I was thinking about, like, I kind of was writing this out a little bit, like, people's fear. Like, are they afraid of something that could kill them? And it turns out we learn, right? Steve and Edie are when they go back to the house, they're having a fight about whether or not one of them is about to leave the other, because that's what they're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something that might kill you. So they don't die. Right. They are afraid and they're fighting about it, but they're not in danger of dying from that, probably. So, so it turns out they're okay. And, like, you know, Scully says she was afraid, but not afraid that something was going to kill her. So she doesn't die.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's an informative and entertaining and kind of heartwarming scene at the same time. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. It's a lot happening.
That scene, a lot happening.
Mulder is so awkward and wonderful.
That is the company,
like,
coming through for sure.
So he's awkward and brilliant. Yeah. So good.
It's like, well, we're just going to take a breath. We're just going to sit here all night.
Yeah. Just going to chill. We're going to just relax.
Relax.
Yeah.
That's what he says. Relax.
And Scully's over there on the couch just like, all right, I'm just here, you guys.
She's
like,
over it.
Just,
yeah. She has no idea. Yeah.
Oh, man.
What they're doing anymore.
The FBI's got nothing to hide. At all.
Yeah.
Yep. And we make it through the night. Saved by the sunrise.
Yeah, they all end up at the house again, the abandoned house. And then the SWAT team can't get in, like the battery ram can't get in, the deputy and the camera crew can't get out. You start to hear noises and all that. But Mulder and Scully, they just go around the back and get in no problem, unlike the SWAT team, right?
Right. Well, see, this
so they're
is my
banging
thought.
On the door.
Right. Well, this is my that. So I was trying to figure that out because, right, why would the SWAT team not be able to bang, like, use a battering ram to get the door down? But Mulder and Scully can walk right in. And is it because they're not mortally afraid? Like, it doesn't affect them because they're not afraid of whatever this thing is.
Scully doesn't believe in anything, and Mulder thinks he can overcome everything.
Right.
So I guess
he just wants to prove that it's real. He's not afraid of it. He's more, like, curious about it than afraid of it. So maybe that's why they can walk in with no problem. I don't know.
Well, that's a classic haunted house trope. Like, the door closes
and
you can't open it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
But then they find the camera crew hiding in the closet. Mm. And Scully's like, oh, I hate you guys.
Hate you guys. Love that.
But I thought she'd come around because she started letting the guy drive around with her. I guess not.
Nope.
I guess not.
She was tolerating them for the sake of tolerating them.
But this is a classic, like, and it's not a slight to the episode. It's a classic no-budget movie Blair Witch ending where it's like all the stuff is going on. You can't. behind a door. You can't hear it, can't see it. He's like, you gotta fight it. He's like, you're a deputy, damn it. You gotta like bleep him out. You gotta cowboy up. Walter tells him to cowboy
up. So I realized too, like, I only realized this because I put the subtitles on. So this is a new revelation about this episode for me. You hear Wetzel yelling in the room. He's screaming that like someone needs to like help, help, like it's attacking me or whatever. And Mulder starts talking to him through the door and is like, you're a sheriff's deputy, cowboy up, blah, blah, blah. And then you hear Wetzel say, you can't, like, he starts shouting, you can't hurt me, you can't hurt me, like, over and over. And I was like, oh, right. And then, so he lives, and the sun comes up, and it goes away. And I was like,
oh. It is ambiguous, right? Because the sun, it's like, cause even they asked her, like, well, do you think the deputy fought him off, or do you think it was the sun? I'm like, because you're right, he does start standing up to himself starts, and believing.
Believing that it, because Mulder is telling him, you know.
Yeah. And you want to like, hope, you want to think that Mulder had an influence on the end.
Sure.
And it wasn't just saved by the sun, but classic X-Files, they leave it entirely ambiguous.
Right.
So.
Also, classic David Duchovny rams into that door and spins a full 360 degrees while he's like ineffectually ramming the door. It's amazing.
Classic FBI maneuver.
I love it. Yeah. Exactly. Really good. Really, really good.
They teach that at the Academy, I'm sure.
The 360 spin.
But the battering ram couldn't get through the door, but Mulder eventually does. So, you know.
Well, apparently. The monster disappears.
Yeah.
His arm is really messed up, though, the deputy. It's like really messed up. So they cart him away, and hopefully he'll be fine. And then, they have their little wrap-up at the end. Scully's like, it's going to be a hard one to write up. It's all going to be about how they edit it.
Right.
And then they do the whole cops ending with, like, the lights and all that, like you guys were saying.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yep. Do we have any further thoughts?
I think my lingering thought about this episode is it does kind of remind me, you know, you talked about Sleepless and some of the other, you know, like werewolves and stuff like that they did. But also it touched me back to How the Ghost Stole Christmas, where we learn, you know, they're in a haunted house and Scully's like, okay, I'm afraid, but it's an irrational fear. And like, she pulls out her gun to go like hunt ghosts in the haunted house. And I was like, okay, well, that's what this is. Like, they are both once again in this scenario where they're like, okay, we're afraid, but not that afraid, you know? And I like, this is just a different presentation of that kind of idea. I like that.
That makes me think about when they go in at the end, Mulder's like, that gun's not going to help.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah. That's useless. Yeah. And then also, though, how I think it's in Kitten in the revival, right? When Skinner is talking about how Mulder and Scully, like, taught him to like go and like shine a light in the dark places or whatever he says. I was like, oh, it's like here on Cop. This is what they're doing in Cops. We're following them around in all these dark places.
Yeah.
Like, that's nice.
And even
those
plus
are just
one.
That reminded me of.
Yeah. Even plus one, right? Where Scully faces down her doppelganger. She's not afraid and it works there too.
Right. It can't hurt her because she's not afraid.
Yeah. That's a good message of. You know, you're not going to fight this with brawn and weapons, right? It's inside yourself and your confidence and your, you know, that kind of your mindset, your emotional state. Like that's the kind of your willpower that you can overcome things through that nature. So that is a good message if you want to find it there.
And that's what Steve and Edie say too, right? Like not that we're not afraid. We're just not going to be chased out of our house. Like we're not going to go anywhere. We're not going to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the Green Lantern thing, right? It's not the absence of fear. It's overcoming
it's
fear.
Overcoming
so,
it.
That's right.
We have nothing
and,
to
and
fear
I gotta say, I was on Shapes years ago, and that's like one of the worst episodes ever. and that had a werewolf in it. And so like they were smart to just and then Alpha, right? I love, Andrew Robertson from Deep Space Nine, Garrick, right? But again, bad track record with the werewolf, so they quickly just, okay, we're not doing that. We're doing something else. And I thought it was interesting that because they could have done, we're chasing around a werewolf or a Bigfoot or a whatever, or a chupacabra, right? Fill in the blank of all the other creatures. But they did like this whole like fear entity thing, which has, like as we've been saying, actually has a, you know, a point or a message or a moral to it if you want to find it.
Sure.
And if you don't, it's just a fun episode of, you know, Mulder and Scully running around with the crew of cops.
Well, and it's a lot like, too, you know, in season 8 in Empedocles, Mulder has that conversation with Doggett. And it's one of my favorites. That's why I think about it all the time, where he's talking about the contagion of evil, like that people are susceptible to it. And it kind of it can infect you if you're not, you know, diligent or whatever. And that kind of it's very similar to his idea of the contagion of fear. So we kind of see that taking shape a little bit, maybe. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
that is the one follow up I would have accepted if it was like Doggett and Reyes doing this, to see what how they would react to.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that would have been so good. I mean, and to the fear, and I would have loved it. That would have been great. Mm.
Yes. Yes.
Probably didn't have it for season 9. That's okay.
All right. Should we go check our listener mailbag and see what some of our friends in the basement and on Twitter had to say?
Let's do it.
All righty. Okay. So let's check. We've got a couple of comments here on Twitter. Let's see. Oscar Groucho says, "This is an episode that is scary comic and darkly prescient. The enemy is fear, an invisible entity that incites distrust, paranoia, and violent enmity. In that sense, it is the most realistic of foes. Our heroes survive the night due to their bond, as we too perhaps shall endure." Well said, I think, right?
Deep, steep yeah. stuff.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I would just make it worse if I tried to add on. That was very well said.
It was. And it does make me think a little bit of Wet Wired. I just watched that recently for the Myth Arc episode and the paranoia and how the videotapes there were supposed to bring out people's worst fears and make them a reality too. Kind of is a similar vein. Not quite the same thing, but it still has the same effect, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bad Blood earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the same thing as well, the paranoia factor. So that's what the X-Files is all about, right?
Yep.
Conspiracy, paranoia. Right?
Yes, absolutely. All right, and then we've got Annie Flowers. She says, "I'm in the minority here, but I am not a fan of this episode. While I appreciate how well they pulled off this crossover, the idea of a fear monster is cheesy, not scary at all, and a lot of the jokes don't land for me. It just feels like they were running out of ideas." So I think we covered that a little bit at the beginning, didn't we?
Yeah.
Like, I love this episode, but I mean, that's all very valid. I don't disagree with that comment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I actually don't think that Annie is quite as in the minority as it probably feels like she is. I think this is an episode that people either really love or really hate. So I think that there are plenty of people out there who don't love it.
Yes. There's actually another response here from Dana Catherine Scully on Twitter. And she says, "I'm not a fan of this one at all. It was an idea they could have done really well, but they didn't stick it at all. And it came off as almost as a joke and making fun of our favorite show." So I'm curious about that take, because I kind of feel more like they're making fun of Cops than they are the X-Files.
But no, I agree 100%. Yeah.
I do think it's a parody, but I think it's a parody of Cops.
Right.
More than a parody of the X-Files.
That's the thing. I think the X-Files is so malleable, you know, because like because my favorite episodes are the Darren Morgan episodes.
Right.
You know? So that's kind of where I'm coming from with it. But even in those, I feel like all the characters are true to themselves. So I don't really feel like, they might make fun of Mulder, but who doesn't, right? It's kind of.
Right.
But that like it's a good natured, fun take on this show that we love, instead of like, isn't this dumb? Like, I don't, but I can see why, if you don't click with the humor, you might feel like it's making fun of the show.
Yeah.
So that's a valid take. But again, like, I think it's more making fun of Cops than the X-Files. That's where I land on it. So.
Yeah. And I think too, this is the X-Files not taking itself too seriously. Like, this is the X-Files remembering that, okay, well, what if we really did have FBI agents out there investigating werewolves in the middle of the night, you know, like what would that look like? And like, here's what Cops would say to them, you know? And I think it's fun to think about it. For me, it's fun to think about it that way.
Yes. And Tony in the basement, he says something along similar lines. He says, "It's the best, one of the greatest episodes of the entire series. Took what could and should have been a gimmick." And in parentheses, he says, "Indeed, as you've probably discussed, it was originally meant to be a take on the great unsolved mysteries," which I know Zach will be gutted never happened.
I know. I love both of them. Yeah, we've talked about that. I have a great love for unsolved mysteries, so that would have been something. I think season 12, give us the unsolved mysteries is back on Netflix. Anyway.
Okay, can you imagine, though? Let's just have one more episode, and then all David and Jillian have to do is sit in a chair and like give like a little monologue, and then someone else will play Mulder and Scully in a reenactment. I would love
that's
that.
How we get them back. That's how we get
them
back.
I'm in. I'm on board.
Let's do it. Do you hear that, Netflix? Are you listening? Obviously, they listen to the X-Cast.
Right.
We're here.
Okay.
Yes. And so Tony continues to say that they ran with it brilliantly, combining atmosphere, a clever narrative structure, and early found footage, stylistics, and crucially, some wonderful deadpan humor to fantastic effect, just perfect in every way. And then we've got Robert Buckles says, I remember being angry when the disclaimer that I knew to be the one for cops was the first thing on screen, thinking I somehow missed it would be airing instead of the X-Files, and then being deeply confused after the cold opening. I'm glad I wasn't the only one. It was an effective crossover with some decent comedy. I really think this is how Mulder and Scully would react to being on camera, especially Scully being super annoyed by it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Nicole Wilson Ripsom says, this one definitely grew on me after a few watches. I initially enjoyed the humor, but largely dismissed the episode as hokey and gimmicky. But over time, I came to really appreciate its cleverness, its visuals, and even more of the humor. I think it's definitely an underrated episode. So, I think...
Underrated?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I would call it under... I mean, I guess maybe if you're a person who didn't immediately love it, you might feel like it's underrated. I feel like people talk about this one a lot, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes up. I think it shows up in a lot of lists.
It does.
Remember that one where they were on cops?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how it goes,
yeah,
right?
It's definitely memorable. So, yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Ellie Jean says, I love seeing self-conscious Mulder and Scully and how they both lean into their extremes, believer in the paranormal or not, for the camera. I also love how the monster is subjective and dependent on the individual's fears. In this way, it echoes themes seen in Arcadia and Home, which focus on the fears of the vulnerable and gentle suburbia from the other, but makes it more obvious that everyone is scared of different things. In this way, it can also be a comment on things like the culture wars seen today. People are scared, but we're all scared of different things depending on our subjective perspective. Plus, Scully's sass is 10 out of 10 in this episode. Clap emoji.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
See, that's a great point. I'm glad so many people are kind of zeroing on this like deeper message, because on the surface you do remember it as that, oh yeah, that fun crossover they did with the cops, but there actually is there's some meat here. You know, yeah. Hey, it's Vince Gilligan, right? One of the greatest TV writers of all time. So of course he's gonna bring something extra to it like that.
Yes, yes. There are plenty of excellent comments to check out in our basement group on the X-Files basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. So if you have not joined over there yet, definitely go check that out. And I think that about wraps things up for this episode, guys. It was really, really fun to have you and to chat with you as always. Cortland, where can we find you online?
Yeah, well, you can find me on in the basement on Facebook sometimes, or on Twitter and Instagram. If you just search for my name, Cortlan, I'm the one with X-Files in her bio. You'll find me. There aren't that many.
Nice. Zach, where can we find you around?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show. We're on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. And I'm over on the United Federation podcast as well with some shows. So you can find us at UFP Earth on Twitter over there.
Excellent, excellent. And you can find the X-Cast, as I said, on Facebook at the X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. We're on Twitter at the X_cast and on Instagram at the X-Cast pod. And you can find me, Sarah Blair, at Sarah L. Blair on Twitter and author.sarahblair on Instagram. So look out for all that stuff. We got some great stuff coming up in the second half of season 7. And we're very excited for the rest of the season. So until then, trust no one.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Frame to Frame.
Being John Malkovich, I think, is probably the most original film I will ever see, because I had absolutely no idea what was going to come next. Then when it did come, I was like, Okay, right, that makes sense.
Well, it makes sense being a loaded term in the context of this film.
Well, yeah, in any other film, it'd be ridiculous. Like, oh, what, we're suddenly going through John Malkovich's subconscious whilst one person's trying to shoot another. Like, it's ridiculous, but it makes sense within the context of the film. I pretty much agree with everything that you were saying about it being the exploitation of celebrity. That was my sort of big takeaway. And the thing I was thinking, oh yes, I'll be able to say this on the podcast and it will sound smart, was that they get their 15 minutes of fame. But...
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the beauty of us not talking about ahead of time, right?
Yeah, is it?
Pick a disc.
Was that kind of your entry into music as well? So did you learn a lot about music because of what your parents' records collection was then? Or?
Oh, of course. They were the first DJs in my life. I mean, you know, what they listened to was gospel to me. And then I started learning my own music through listening to albums on the radio, listening to stuff that my friends would dub a cassette copy. Oh, you got to hear this album. They would dub a couple songs and make mixtapes. And then passing mixtapes around between friends to kind of introduce each other to new bands. But the bands that I listened to in my youngest years, my childhood, are the ones that I still look back at with just some, because they helped really shape and form who I am as a music fan.
Rarely Going, an animated Star Trek podcast.
They've gone through that script and went, yep, that's fine. And that's been approved by, you know, the executive producers, the writing room. There's a lot of people that have had to go through this episode before it's got to air. And, you know, the fact that they can have something like that where it can be a little bit self-critical of the thing is good. You know, Star Trek can often be classed as taking itself a little bit too seriously. And I think something like that, you know, the fact that people go, yeah, you know what, that's fair point. And they're probably, you know, people are aware of the criticism, the positive things. You know, people are basing Star Trek around a lot of some of these decisions and leaning into that. So I think that, you know, it shows that the writers are self-aware, certainly. And, you know, that also extends out with the Lower Decks kind of writing room too.
Yeah, fair.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network. The X-Cast and X-Files podcast was created by Tony Black and is produced and hosted by Carl Sweeney, Sarah Blair and Kurt North.
You can find the podcast on Twitter at the X_cast, on Facebook by typing in the X-Cast, and in our group, X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group, and on Instagram, at the X-Cast pod.
Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member on Patreon. Our patrons get early access to episodes, behind-the-scenes chats with our hosts and a thriving community of X-Files, and other premium interviews and specials. To find out more and subscribe, you can go to patreon.com/thexcast. That's patreon.com/thexcast.
We are also part of the We Made This podcast network, full of popular culture shows, including our Millennium series, The Time Is Now. You can find all of our shows at our website, wemadethispod.com, or via Twitter at wemadethispod.
Thanks for listening and keep watching the skies.